KBZE, Booze League Radio is on the air.
Booze League Radio. Wiley Withers.
The Commish.
Stephen Orr.
Otter.
This is The Boozecast. Broadcasting live from The Booze League HQ.
I drink too much. The last time I gave a urine sample, I had an olive in it. Welcome into The Boozecast. This is draft two of the Boozecast. I am the commish, Wiley Q. Withers III, Esquire. With me, as always, is the titan of tippling, the anti-dwarf of drinking, Stephen the Otter Orth. Cheers, brother.
Cheers.
Welcome into draft two of the Boozecast. You can reach us online at boozeleague.com. We have pictures from the show as we're doing it. We also have links and anything else relevant that we talk about here today. You can find it online at on the draft page on the Booze League website. And we can also find us online as well on Instagram, Twitter, and Otter is taking control of our Snapchat. So if you want to follow along with Otter, hop on our Snapchat at Booze League. He does a lot of traveling and a lot of drinking. But all that being said, I kind of think it's time to get this going because I am thirsty. Earl, let's get this party started.
The day.
So the beer of the day, normally when we do a beer of the day, I play a band from the town that the beer of the day is brewed in. Today I chose not to do that. This band is actually from Australia. This is not a beer that we're drinking today from Australia. This band describes themselves as a heavy rock band that smashed the shit out of their stoner, glam, doom, punk, and psychedelic rock influences. They're formed back in 2008. The name of this band is Mammoth Mammoth. The reason that they're named Mammoth Mammoth is that they thought of the biggest thing possible and named themselves after that. And then they doubled it.
Give me two.
So they are Mammoth Mammoth. They're not just Mammoth. They're Mammoth Mammoth.
Give me two.
So obviously we're doing something from the town of Mammoth. We're actually drinking a brewery from Mammoth Lakes, higher in the Eastern Sierras, 7,900 feet up. Population's only 8,200, fairly small town, split evenly half and half between males and females. There is a brewery up there, just a hop, hop, skip and a jump from the entrance to Yosemite on the eastern side. Today's beers of the day, we're actually doubling up because it's Mammoth Mammoth. We're going to do two beers from Mammoth Brewing.
Give me two.
Today's beer of the day is, or rather beers of the day, Mammoth Brewing Company's Yosemite Pale Ale and Golden Trout Kolsch. We're actually drinking the Golden Trout Kolsch first. We can thank Otter for bringing these back from Mammoth. I'm not really that familiar with Kolsch. I think that you are way more familiar than I am.
So a Kolsch essentially is basically a lagered style ale. So it's a, again, I'm not a brewer myself, but I have drinking a few of them. My understanding is that it is brewed like an ale in a with like lager yeast.
Okay.
So it's basically like a little bit of both. So typically they're a little bit lighter, a little more crisp. Definitely a nice refreshing summertime beer.
And according to their website, I'm going to read a little bit about what Mammoth Brewing says. This is the vision Mammoth Brewing has for this particular beer. Native to Sierra Nevada mountain waters, the elusive golden trout is a brilliantly colored prize to any fisherman. And this beer is described as grassy and crisp, like a Sierra stream, because many of those streams are grassy. This Kolsch pours as a gold and vibrant. It pours as gold and vibrant as the fish it's named for. It is. It's got Vienna malts, gives it full body and flavor, and it's got hops, Saz hops, to take it to a more softer floral place. And they say it pairs well with Sierra sunshine, which I kind of feel most anything does, really.
I think it pairs well with any kind of sunshine.
Yeah. All right, sunshine.
You probably drink these at night, too.
Yeah, I would guess that you would probably drink them any time of the day, and it probably pairs well with it. But Mammoth Brewing is, you've been there more often than I have.
I've been there a handful of times.
What is your opinion of Mammoth Brewing?
So besides being a kick-ass brewery, it's also in Mammoth, which if I had to pick, you know, like a list of my top five places on the earth, if not top one favorite place, I'd probably pick Mammoth. You just get just amazing fresh air.
Just it Mammoth in general. I know you've talked about that a lot.
Yeah. You got just gorgeous scenery, wildlife, bears. Not that I would want to be really close to a bear, but
you ever
that,
seen
that's something else.
You ever seen the damage they do to a car if you leave something in the car? Like, they bears are not messing around. Bears will destroy a car.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, but
they're pillagers. They'll break into anything and they'll take everything.
That Yogi was full of shit, man.
So is Smokey.
So is, well, no, Smokey's correct, because only you personally can prevent forest fires, which you have been doing by vaping instead of smoking, so I salute you. Mammoth Brewing has been brewing since 1995, which means they've been around for about 22 years. They do have a tap room up there. Have you tried the food up there?
It is amazing.
Yeah, awesome. I looked up the menu online. It was mainly brewery foods, but they kind of take it to another level. You know, they mac and cheese and tots and...
Yeah, I had the, it was either a bison burger or a buffalo burger. I can't remember which B-word animal it was.
Was it a mammoth burger?
It might have been a mammoth
Give
burger.
I'll take two of those, please.
But yeah, it was delicious.
So I kind of feel like now's a good time if you want to hit up Mammoth Brewing. Now is a good time, unless you want to go skiing, in which case, wait a few months. But Mammoth Brewing...
Well, you just missed skiing up there. The lifts just closed this past Saturday.
Yeah, we had a ridiculous amount of snow.
Yeah.
Ridiculous amount of snow. So, so far, this is our first beer of the day, the Golden Trout Kolsch from Mammoth Brewing. So let's get it going.
Round one.
Yup.
I think I'll have a beer.
I think I'm having a beer, frankly.
Say my name.
Beer!
Yeah, I'm actually very impressed. This is actually the very first beer I've ever had from Mammoth Brewing. This is number one for me. Right.
You've
here.
Been missing out.
I clearly have. Well, I know you're friends with the brewer, right? I mean, I always see. Is that right? Or
no?
Who is
no.
it from Mammoth Brewing that you're friends with?
I'm friends with one of the reps, Colin.
Oh, okay.
The Mammoth Brew Viking, as he
the
is
Brew
on
Viking.
Instagram.
That's it. That's yes. why I remember him. He looks yeah. like he should be the head brewer.
I actually run into him more often than you would think. Like pretty much any beer festival or any like craft beer event. I see him.
He seeks you out?
I'd probably say I seek him more out.
Well, you got a better view than most people out there.
True. I mean, but then also people have a better view of me, too.
The Viking. You're the tallest Viking in the land. And speaking of Stephen the Otter Orth, let's go over to you for the news.
Spanning the globe to bring you all the news that's fit to booze to. This is the Booze Line News with KBZE's intrepid pub reporter, Stephen the Otter Orth.
Booze League Radio.
So after my epic weekend that I had this past weekend, which we'll talk about a little bit later, I was starting to think that my drinking habit might actually be a bad habit. until I came across this article, people who drink alcohol every day are less likely to get dementia. Oh. So,
well, I will never get dementia then, apparently.
Me either. So UCSD, University of California in San Diego, did a 29-year study.
Of course they did. And they probably did it all themselves. Right? I mean, you're down in San Diego, you're just drinking, you're like, well, why don't we get funding for this kind of thing? I mean, if we're sitting here drinking anyways, hey, why don't we see, do you remember what we did last Tuesday? And then they start taking notes, and next thing you know, they have a federal funds on a study.
Yeah, like, do you remember what we did 4 years ago? Like, when we started this college? Wait, that was 29 years ago. Oh, we got too drunk there. So the UCSD did a study that has found that people over the age of 65, if they drink about three drinks a day, are more likely to live a happy and healthy retirement, not ending up with dementia.
Really?
Yeah. So the study tracked more than 1,000 middle-class white men and women, and this is the latest and pretty much only study that links drinking with like alcohol intake with life longevity.
So was there an upper limit on this? Did they find that if you go over this many drinks per day that perhaps you're going to lose brains? I mean, You know what I mean? Like, did they have? Did they bookend it? I mean, we know what
so,
the minimum is.
So they
is.
Do go into it a little bit. So basically, there's a lot of large scientific words that, I mean, if we're going to try to pronounce right now, that could be a whole game.
It's still early on. You should be able to try and pronounce those now. We're only on round one.
So basically, there's a few like outliers of the study, like the fact that they're focusing on one specific region of San Diego County, which is more of an affluent California suburb. And then before we get into the study, we're just going to go ahead and define the National Institute. See, I'm already having trouble.
This is your German.
Yeah, I know, right? The National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism defines heavy drinking, quote unquote, as 3 drinks for women and 4 drinks for men. So if
that's heavy drink, that's
what
heavy.
I'm
doing
air quotes. Are
heavy drinking.
The scholars are calling it.
So all the nerds say you drink too much if you drink more than 4 beers a day.
Well, so
alcohol.
Is that what we're hearing?
So basically, they're saying if you're a heavy drinker, you will lessen your risk of getting dementia and other health related risks.
It's because they take your liver out before you actually get
they
that
might.
Old.
But they also say, and this is what kind of like bursted my bubble, was the fact that if you're a heavy drinker or an excessive drinker, which is anything above that of a heavy drinker, then you're not really guaranteed to live without dementia. So then bubble bursted.
So
you are tearing me apart, Lisa.
So you're kind of being Lisa on this one, and you're kind of like ruining it for everyone by saying, hey, guess what? No dementia for you if you drink this amount, but you'll probably get dementia if you drink, you know, as much as you do.
Right.
Okay.
Another few key points to point out is the fact that the studies that were in court, like the genre of the people that were surveyed, mm-hmm. were from more of an affluent area. And those that consume alcohol regularly, particularly wine, are more likely having like a higher income, which can be related to like better education and
better healthcare
and better healthcare as well. So that is a bit of an outlier. But and then it says at the end, naturally, scientists insist that the data should not be used as a warrant for people to drink more. So
winning.
Well, so all I'm hearing really out of everything you said was that if you drink a lot, you're not going to get dementia. Is that a fair takeaway?
That's what I took away from it.
I feel like that's what I'm taking away from it. I'm totally
exactly.
fine with that.
But as long as we're on the topic of drinking, we'll talk about those fancy copper mugs that all those people like to drink their Moscow Mules out of.
Oh, those, and they're expensive too. Those get stolen all the time.
Yeah, I have talked to a few bar owners, and they've said their copper mugs just keep disappearing, and they have to keep replacing them. They're like, well, shit, we should probably just stop serving these things.
Yeah, I got one of those. I actually got a Moscow Mule in a pint glass at one point because they're like, you know what?
That's like that
whatever.
Seems so sacrilegious, though.
It does.
Like,
but I think that
drink coffee in a non-coffee mug.
Well,
something.
It's the sign that they've given up. They're yeah, like, true. You know what? I'm over it. You know, keep your goddamn mugs. Here's a pint glass. Kiss my ass.
Yeah. So the
bitch.
There was a lovely article from Iowa's Alcoholic Beverage Division,
mm-hmm.
Who declared that copper and copper alloys can be poisonous when consumed. So those lovely little copper cups. Anything with a pH, like a lower pH balance, which your typical Moscow Mule, which is just, what is that, like lime juice, ginger beer, and vodka, it's going to be well under a pH of 6.0, which is very low acidity. So that, when it mixes with the copper and the copper alloys, can actually give you copper poisoning. And if we want to talk about some difficult words...
let's hear them. I want to hear all the difficult words that you
copper
get.
Copper toxicity is sometimes referred to as hypercupremia.
Brugeries.
Or copperitis? Copperitis?
Copperitis. You're making that word up. Copperitis?
No, it's printed right there. Copperiedus. See, I can spell it fine. Just the saying is hard.
Congratulations. I've got copperitis. I can't come in.
But don't be too worried, though, because these copper cups that you get, or the little mugs or chalices or whatever you want to call them, Most of the ones that are manufactured today are lined with nickel or stainless steel, so that way the copper doesn't actually touch your booze and you won't die.
So don't scrub them too hard when you're cleaning them, and
but
you'll
if
be
you,
fine.
If you feel worried about this, some of the side effects can include vomiting.
Oh, good times.
Stomach pains, confusion, drowsiness, and fainting fits.
I don't want your life.
Hungover. Which kind of sounds like your typical hangover.
Yeah, I mean, like, I that's like Saturday morning for me, really.
Wednesday morning for me.
Oh. Every Wednesday?
Practically.
That old devil Hooch has turned her into the unsightly person you see before you.
Wow. Okay, well, so less Moscow mules, I guess.
Or just more Moscow mules and pint glasses.
Okay, well, hey, okay. I'm in.
Other than that, so... Yes.
Well said, sir.
There we go.
Well said.
Better out than in, I always say. So the past week or two have been pretty exciting within the scope of the craft beer world. I don't know if I should say exciting so much as interesting.
There's been some movement.
Well, there has been some movement. So we're talking about the lovely Florida-based brewery, Funky Buddha.
And I have not, sadly, had any chance to try a Funky Buddha. I know I hear great things about it, but I personally have not had any.
Yeah, so today, actually, August 10th, 2017, yeah! Mark your calendars, it's the day that Constellation Brands bought out the Funky Buddha Brewery.
Well, all right. So that's number two for them.
Yeah, so Constellation has been growing their quiver of craft breweries, so.
And they are very much one or the other. They're either shitty Mexican beers or, hey, we just bought
Ballast Point.
Yeah, Ballast Point, and now we need 500 different versions of Sculpin.
Mm-hmm. And Funky Buddha Brewery, for anyone that doesn't know, they're based out of Florida, and they actually have a pretty impressive list of, you know, beer competition awards, like gold, silver, bronze awards. Mm. I think last year, I believe, at the World Beer Cup, they took home 5 medals.
Oh, well, that's pretty good.
I have not had a chance to try any of them, but, I mean, if you're winning medals, then...
Yeah, I don't know if they have distribution out here in California.
They don't. They only distribute in Florida. But who knows,
it'd be a bottle trade.
Now with Constellation owning them, they might have... Maybe not quite as far as California, but somewhere a little bit further. I know they do primarily better with their porter style beers, their darker beers. But I know they did win a medal for one of their pails or IPAs or some hop
so
or something.
I'm going to self-report here a little bit, and I'm going to come out and say something that's very embarrassing to myself. As I first started getting into the craft beer world, as it were, and I'd see the words Funky Buddha together occasionally, and I pictured Buddha beer, like, you know, those green bottles?
Oh, yeah.
In the shape of a Buddha. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's not bad. I mean, I don't know why everyone's freaking out about it. I mean, it's okay. you know, I'll drink it, I guess. I took a few, like, in the very first website that we did, I took a few pictures of it, like, sitting on my fence in the sunlight, this stupid, shitty beer
the Buddha-shaped green bottle.
Yep. Yeah. I think it's just called Buddha beer. I didn't even actually know what it's called. I called it Buddha beer because
I had
obvious
some of those,
reasons.
Many, many moons ago.
Yeah, and I don't know that if it's still around, but I thought for a long time that was Funky Buddha, so I apologize to Funky Buddha, but in my defense, I'm from California, so anything east of Colorado is just kind of out there, and I don't know geography that way. I mean, they say it's in Florida. Okay, cool.
Sure.
Yeah, why not? You know,
humid out there, right?
America's penis, right on. You know, it makes some good beer, whatever it is.
And then the next one up, is Anchor Brewing. So one of America's oldest craft breweries, they have sold out to Sapporo.
Hi.
Hello. Sake bombs. and actually, a lot of people have been making a big stink about it, but it's not their first time selling out. They sold out again before for an undisclosed amount back in May of 2010.
Well, and they've sold out many, many times in their history. This is not.
Yeah.
It's not like it's not a tradition. I'm gonna try that again here. It's not a traditional craft beer in that, or brewery rather, in that, like, you know, you get in there, you start your craft brewery, like a Stone. You know, he gets in there, Greg, Coach Cox.
Pronunciation unsure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Brewdries.
It's Brewdries. He gets in there, starts it from nothing, and builds it up. Anchor started in the 1800s, I think.
Yeah, late 1800s.
And has gone from there to where they are now. And it's kind of a different model. It's a beloved icon, I guess, as much as that one tower in San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge and, mm-hmm. I don't know, the gay bathhouses or whatever the hell is going on in San Francisco.
Alcatraz.
He's nuts! But at the same time, though, I don't know that it has quite the same connection to craft beer that a number of the other breweries would have that have, quote-unquote, sold out.
I think this is the first major sellout, though, because before, like, I wouldn't necessarily say that they... I mean, back in 2010 was when they really, like, last sold, but before, I think it was more of just a change ownership while still remaining in the realm of craft beer.
Yeah, this now is the being, first...
This
corporate.
Is like this is like the big one, like being sold by Sapporo. Mm. So,
bought by Sapporo.
Being, yeah, that's what I said.
Brew
I know I'm trying to play it off.
Yeah,
right?
we got you.
got you.
But I agree with that. I mean, this is kind of the first, and I think it's more. We're signaling to Earl right now that we're out of beer.
Beer wench?
Yeah. Wench? Oh, Melman's gonna do it. God bless Melman.
Got you.
God bless
you. Where'd Earl go?
Now he's running the board.
It's a trap.
I think that more than anything, what I'm kind of seeing a trend, it seems, is the idea of getting angry against a corporation taking over a brewery more than anything else. So it's not the fact that Anchor sold or moved or whatever. It's the fact that it sold to Sapporo. And I think that that's really kind of the bigger issue here is that it's a major company. Sapporo, and I got a few facts on Sapporo here because I think it's an interesting story. Sapporo, you know, we're going to talk about this for a while, so we might as well go on to round two.
Round two.
I'll have another.
Cheers.
It's a trap.
Ooh. I'm slamming him tonight.
Utah, give me two.
So for those listening at home and following along at home, since we're doing two different beers of the day today, this is the Yosemite Pale Ale. I actually kind of like this. It's 5.5% on the ABV.
Alcohol.
And this is actually very, very tasty. I'm going to be honest.
So real quick, I want to say one thing about this beer. Many years ago.
I'm sorry, time's up.
All right.
So,
many years ago when I first went to the Mammoth Brewery,
yeah.
I had this this beer called the Paranoids Pale Ale by Mammoth Brewing Company. I had it when I had it in the brewery, then I had it the next day when I was snowboarding, I had it up on the mountain, and I loved that beer. And when I started seeing Mammoth Brewing get distributed around here, like the Ventura County area, I saw a lot of like the IPA 395, their Double Nut Brown, their Epic IPA.
Double Nut.
Yeah. All good beers, but I couldn't find.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I meant.
These nuts!
I couldn't find the Paranoids Pale Ale anywhere. So, kind of just gave up my search. I was like, all right, I guess I'll just drink it next time I go up to Mammoth. Then when I first met Colin, the Mammoth Brew Viking, shout out to you. He actually informed me that the Paranoids Pale Ale had been discontinued.
Oh.
But they brought it back as the Yosemite Pale Ale.
So this is the exact beer that Paranoid Pale Ale was.
I don't know if it's exactly the same, but it's the one that they replaced the Paranoids Pale with. I guess I heard something that the name Paranoids Pale Ale kind of had like a bad connotation to it, so they decided to drop that.
Yeah, I could see that.
But
I can definitely see that. I'm a big fan. Pale ales have become my jam recently. I've kind of actually pumped the brakes a little bit on IPAs, as I've mentioned a number of times. And this is a pretty good pale ale. It kind of reminds me a little bit. It's got the more rounded taste that a Sierra Nevada would have, which is, it's a great pale ale, but it's got that kind of, it's not that sharp kind of kick to the balls.
These nuts.
That, some of the more hoppy beers are hoppy.
Yeah,
but
you really get a lot of that.
There's
that
more maltiness.
Nice, the balance between the malts and the hops.
I agree. That's what it is. See, I, I trust a beer tender to tell me things like that regarding my palate. So this is good. I'm a big fan of Yosemite Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm. Aren't we all?
All right. Sorry. So we're talking
Sapporo.
So Sapporo is interesting because they bought Anchor Brewing for $85 million. So you look back to what Ballast Point was bought for by Constellation, who again, you know, funky Buddha. They bought a billion dollars with a B.
Did you say a billion dollars worth of P?
That's a lot of P. I found out, you know, because I kind of did some research into this because that number fascinated me. 85 million. I don't even know between 85 million and 1 billion. I don't even know what that percentage is. I went to UCSB, so math is not my strong suit, but that's a big discrepancy.
It's a big number.
And it turns out what they did is they paid 2.6 times the annual revenue that Anchor makes.
Right, which I believe within the past few years, Anchor has been down about $33 million, give or take.
Well, then their portfolio for beer is not that big.
Right. I mean, if you look at Ballast Point versus Anchor, I'd say a greater percentage of that, of the dollar amount that it was sold for, that's how much more beer was like a greater percentage of beer was sure. being sold. Because Ballast Point, I mean, there was a time when you went anywhere, not only did they have the regular Sculpin, but they had the grapefruit Sculpin or the pine, like then it was like the pineapple Sculpin.
Yeah, and I'd be curious, and I didn't have a chance to research it. What was the annual revenue for Ballast Point at the time that it sold for $1 billion?
I don't know the
and I'd love to look
revenue.
That up.
That would be definitely something we could cover on another draft, but
we're going to.
Yeah,
it's going
to
happen.
Have to, yeah.
I might, you know.
But I do know like the price point for like a keg was that much greater than, you know, any of the other standards. Like where you take a like a half barrel keg, 15 and a half gallons of Ballast Point Sculpin, and you're paying maybe like $220 to like $240, not including like any what do you call it? Any deposits or anything like that. Whereas you can get a keg of, say, you know, like Firestone's Union Jack or some other kind of similar IPA for like $100 less.
Right, right, exactly. So with all
and
that
people
being...
people were buying it. Like the high price point that Ballast Point had, people were buying it. All,
well, and here's what's interesting is Sapporo's not scared to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
So back in 2005, they bought Sleeman. Does that name ring a bell? It's a Canadian brewery.
Sounds Canadian.
Sleeman. If you look up, and I've done this before for many reasons for the Booze League, I looked up the bottom of the list for Beer Advocate. Sleeman's Clear is number like, I don't know, it's within like 10 or 12 of the bottom list of all their beers.
Wow.
It's got a very, in fact, it has a Beer Advocate score of 58. And just to give some context to that, Pabst has a score of 70, which seems higher than it should be.
Alcohol.
Seems way higher than it should be.
Is that out of 100?
Yeah, that's out of 100.
Wow.
So it's still closer to the middle, but I still feel like it should be lower. Whereas Keystone Light, which is closer to the Beer Advocate score of Sleeman's Clear, which is 58, Keystone Light is at a 50. So they bought Sleeman. Did I already tell you how much?
No, you didn't.
You want to take a guess? What's the over-under you think that they bought this brewery for back in 2005? Before the craft brewery boom, what do you think they bought this for?
$75 million.
Not even close. $400 million.
Oh, wow.
$400 million for Sleeman. Which is a beer that...
For piss water?
Have you ever had Sleeman? I mean, they got a number of different brands. They're much like a Pabst or Keystone or whatever, or Molson or whatever for Canada. But have you ever even seen anything, like heard of it? Does anyone
this
talk about it?
This is the first I've ever heard of it.
Like when you think of Canadian beers, what do you think? You think of Labatt's?
I just think of a can with a maple leaf on it. And it's probably actually syrup.
When I think of Sleeman, I think of the Sleestaks from... What was that Sid and Marty Krofft show with Sleestaks? The Land of the Lost, where they went over the... all right, I'm aging myself here, but whatever.
I think your beard's doing that for you.
No. How dare you? You know what? There are no pictures of this beard, so, you know, come on, man. I got a face for radio right now. Is all
the picture I took of us recording. That's going to be online later.
I just thought it was for the holiday season.
Bitch!
Ho, ho, ho.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I got your ho. So just to give some perspective on what they did, Sapporo is the number one selling beer brand in the U.S. They are number four, though, in Japan. So I think they're trying to kind of make a move a little bit over here. Asahi's number, oh, I'm sorry, Kirin's number one, Asahi, Suntory. So, hey, when you go out for sushi, hey, guess what? Order the Kirin first. It's the most popular Japanese beer, followed by, you know, if they have Suntory. And number four is Sapporo's number. It's the last one.
Every time I do go out for sushi, I always get a Sapporo.
I used to, because I don't know why. It just seemed like sushi. And I've started switching over to Asahi or Kirin. Turns out Kirin's the most popular in Japan, though.
But so. Sapporo's the most popular right here.
But this got me thinking. So now Sapporo owns Anchor. And so I started looking into other beers that were owned by breweries that you wouldn't think of. And this led me to create a list. And we're going to play a little game here now called Name That Brewery. Called Name That Brewery. Here's how we're going to play there, Mr. Orth, Stephen the Otter Orth. What we're going to do is I'm going to give you a beer. Well, the name of a beer. You already have a beer. You know, we'll get to round three in a second, but I'm going to give you the name of a beer.
This is the Otter's Trial.
No, this is the Otter's Trial. So I'm going to give you the name of a beer, and you got to tell me who owns it. And then you're either going to be
name
right
of a specific beer and who brews it, or like a brewery and who owns that brewery.
So, for instance, let's warm up on this, and I'm going to throw you a meatball, as they say in baseball, Goose Island.
Like who owns Goose Island?
Yep.
Oh, that's AB InBev.
Exactly. So I'm going to turn that off so I can hear the. There we go. So Goose Island, correctly. So that's what I'm going to do. So if I said Funky Buddha, you would say?
Constellation.
Correct. All right. So now we're going to make it a little tough. Now that you have the idea of the show.
I'm actually kind of curious about how well I'll do.
Yeah, I am as well.
Show me what you got.
All right. You ready? I'm gonna start off kind of easy. I'm going to start off very, very easy. This one's an easy one. Keystone.
Very, very easy.
I don't know. Like, I would have to know something about Keystone or, like, drink it often for me to have any knowledge about it.
Keystone. Who owns Keystone?
Keystone?
Nope. Keystone's owned by Miller Coors.
Oh, all right.
Okay, all right. So we're going to start making it a little harder now. Actually, I'm going to make it a little bit easier for you. I'm going to throw a little curveball your way. Corona.
Oh, that's...
Brew Drees.
I don't know. I know it. I'm drawing a blank.
Constellation.
Really?
Yep. Oh. Constellation owns pretty much any Mexican beer you can assume Constellation owns. In fact, in Constellation's stable is Corona, Modelo, both Especial and Negro.
That's right.
And Pacifico.
You put me on the spot.
I know, and it is cracking me up. I'm going to be honest.
Winning.
So I'm going to make it a little harder now. Red Stripe.
Man.
And see, here's actually why I kind of like this game, because these are all beers that we take for granted. We see them on a list somewhere, you know, we drink them somewhere, and it never occurs to us who actually owns them. And usually it's very disparate who owns them. It's not who you would think would own them.
So is Red Stripe, is that going to be like AB InBev too?
Nope, it's Diageo.
Diageo?
You know who Diageo is, right?
No, I've never even heard of that either.
So Diageo, back in the 90s, Guinness actually merged with a company, Metropolitan something, I don't know. They didn't do anything in booze. It was all luxury, textiles, things like that. And they became Diageo. And they're a giant multi-billion dollar company now. And they own stuff like Jose Cuervo. They own, I think, Johnny Walker. Diageo's huge, but basically it's Guinness.
Okay.
owns Red Stripe. I'm going to throw another one your way. Lineakugel.
Lineakugel, the Shandies?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lineakugel.
That's got to be like Coors or something too.
Well, no, make a decision on that, because it's kind of up, you know, who is it?
Let's go with Miller Coors.
Correct, because they're up in Wisconsin. And Miller, being based in Milwaukee, it kind of makes a lot of sense there. Let's throw another one that's kind of fun here. Moretti. Italian beer.
Constellation?
No, Moretti is owned by Heineken.
Heineken.
And I'm going to make an easy one here for you as well. Lagunitas. Who owns
Heineken.
Lagunitas?
I knew that.
I wanted to make you feel like you knew what you're talking about, so I gave you...
That was the meatball, right?
Yeah, I threw you another meatball there. I'm going to throw you another meatball here. Stella Artois.
What the hell?
Miller Coors? Constellation. My dog Spot.
Literally, InBev was...
Didn't I say that one first?
No, you did not.
Sad face.
Yeah, no, you did not. We're getting low on time here to go on to your next segment here. So I'm going to start... we're going to do like a little lightning round here. Killian's.
AB InBev. Constellation. Shit.
Peroni.
Heineken. Constellation.
Say the other Italian thing. ABN, whatever.
AB InBev? That's not Italian.
I don't know.
No, you're wrong. Peroni is actually Asahi.
Talk about a curveball.
Peroni's a great beer.
Exactly. Well, yeah, no, Peroni's amazing. Such but here's, and this is kind of what I'm going to finish up. And this is actually what led me into doing the research into who owns what. So I actually had to diagram this out. I sat for like a half hour yesterday diagramming out who bought what, who did what. And what ended up happening is after a bunch of mergers, you had Molson Coors. You had on one side, you had SAB Miller. So South African breweries back in 2002 merged with Miller, got together, became SAB Miller. On the other side, you had Molson and Coors get together in like 2005 or somewhere in the mid-2000s. They got together, became Molson Coors. Then those two, SAB Miller and Molson Coors, got together. They became Miller Coors. So AB InBev bought that. And they had to divest themselves of all the American stuff. So all the Coors, all the Miller stuff. Miller owned Peroni. Miller owned Grolsch, Pilsner, or Quell, stuff like that. And so what ended up happening was that Asahi swooped in, grabbed those up. So Asahi now owns Peroni, Pilsner, Quell, and Grolsch. So I kind of, and Asahi is number two in Japan. They're not number one here in America. So I feel like Sapporo is making this move on Anchor in order to step up their market share out here and kind of keep up with the Joneses, as Asahi now owns three brands that are fairly big here. Peroni, you can find any Italian restaurant, you can find Peroni. And Peroni's one of my absolute favorite
Peroni
beers.
Like anywhere.
Moretti, a little bit less so. Pilsner Urquell, still well known. Grolsch, known.
Pilsner Urquell is one of the original Pilsners that came out and just crushed it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So those are my thoughts with that. And hey, well done, sir. Well done. You did okay.
I got like a 20%. That's immensely
you
failing.
You wouldn't move on to the next one. You would not move on to the next round. But you know what? Thanks for coming and playing. I mean, you kind of did okay. So now we're going to move on to the next round of good stuff.
Now pouring.
The Booze Cast.
So now we're moving on to your Bluesapalooza. And I think we're almost on to round three as well, but not there yet.
Bluesapalooza.
Which I'm jealous of. And by the way, when I talked to Sandro, the Firestone rep, today, he was very upset that he got so many Snapchats from you because he was so freaking jealous. I actually think that's why he shaved his beard, is that he was so upset that he had to kind of go, you know, like some people whip themselves with, you know, like the monks or whatnot. I think he shaved his beard in anguish.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Bluesapalooza.
Okay.
So for those of you that don't know, it's a big blues festival, like a multi-day blues festival and beer festival up in Mammoth. So hence the reason we're drinking the Mammoth beers. I brought these home from the brewery this past weekend. So the festival actually started last Thursday on August 3rd. Went till this past Sunday, August 6th. And I got up there Friday. I left Friday morning. Took about 5 to 6 hours or something to get to get up there. I was in a big van with a bunch of people. I wasn't driving, so we were just in the back cracking.
That's not
beers.
Bad. If you're the one driving, that drive sucks.
Especially when everyone else in your car is cracking beers and we're doing a little bottle share in the back. We had some Institution Brewing. We had, you know, a bunch of different beers back there.
I think I'll have a beer.
Actually, before we got up to Mammoth, we stopped in Bishop. There's a little brewery called the Mountain Rambler.
I've
Brewing
meant to
Company.
Go there. I have not gone there.
So Bishop is actually a pretty cool place.
They got Shit's Bakery. I'm sorry, Shat's.
Shat's. They also have this little beef jerky place. I'm drawing a blank on the name, but
I'm into jerky.
Is it Shit's Jerky?
It's actually really good jerky. The Mountain Rambler Brewery, super, really impressed. It's like, you know, Bishop, like in the middle of nowhere, pretty much. And they had some pretty tasty beers. We stopped there. I had a flight, tried a bunch of their different beers. They actually had a collaboration with Mountain Rambler, the Mammoth Brewing Company, June Lake Brewing Company, and this other brewery up there, in Mammoth called Black Doubt.
It was all in one beer, all that collaboration.
Oh, so wow. All the breweries got together and they brewed this IPA called the Hell or Fire or something. I'm drawing a blank on that name too. I think it was Hell or Fire IPA.
All the way.
It was pretty good though. I definitely had a few of those this weekend. But anyway, so we got up to Mammoth Friday, checked in. Working with the brewery, I was able to go into the brewer's reception. And that is probably the largest bottle share I've ever been to. So every brewery involved, and there was probably close to...
So kind of like an organized bottle share where everyone brings the heavy
I items. Wouldn't really say there was any organization to it. You get a bunch of these breweries together, and brewery people are beer drinking people.
Yes.
And they like to drink beer. So.
And they like to show off. Would that be a correct statement?
Oh, showing off. Absolutely. Okay. So for example, Figaro Mountain, we brought a bunch of our... like 22-ounce bottles of our 6th anniversary, which, for those of you who have never tried that, it's a barley wine aged in a few different types of brandy barrels and a whiskey barrel, and it's 14%. Alcohol. So we brought a lot of that up. So the brewer's reception, it was in, like, the festival grounds, roped off, so you had to have, you know, like, a certain level of access to get in, basically brewer access to get in. And throughout this little sectioned area was a bunch of tables with ice buckets on it. Inside the ice buckets were beers from basically like every brewery there. Like
really?
Every brewery brought like 6-packs, like 12-ounce bottles, 22-ounce bottles, shoot, even like 64-ounce growlers in here. And you just walk around with your big 20-ounce cups and you can just grab whatever. Like anything's fair game.
That's amazing.
So that was a lot of fun.
600 gallons of beer in one
Like I said,
thing.
There was probably like close to 150 or so breweries there.
That's fantastic.
In total. Moving on, like Saturday was, so the music went, it was like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I got up there Friday.
I'm sorry, Otter, we got to interrupt you.
Round three.
Oh, I'll have another. Ping pong.
Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid.
Behind the scenes,
what happens after the podcast.
Cannonball coming.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
So being up there with the brewery, I wasn't able to really get to enjoy as much of the music as I would have liked to, but I was able to hear it.
What was the setup with that then? So you had basically a craft beer festival going on 2 days, right?
The beer part was Saturday and Sunday for about 12 to 5 Saturday.
But it's all the same grounds as the music as well.
On the same grounds, yeah.
So if I were to buy a ticket and walk in, I got this craft beer festival, and I'm like, you know what? I'm good on beer. I got to take a step back, which, for the record, obviously would never happen.
Never.
I got to wander over and watch some music. That's all one day if you go to this thing.
Right. So there were I didn't have to buy a ticket for this event. I was fortunate enough to be able to go and actually work the event.
For those of you listening at home, there were some air quotes.
There was a bunch of different types of tickets you could buy. So you could buy like the music lovers pass for any one of the days. And so if you bought like the music lovers Saturday pass, that gave you access to only the music. So you can go and watch the bands play. And the way it was set up, there was you walk in and the brewery area was like a big U-shaped, and at the other side of the bend of the U, if I'm describing that good enough or well enough.
Yep, good enough for me. I can see it.
And then in the middle, there was like, there's also like booths where you can go up and buy beer. So if you didn't have like the beer lover's pass, you can buy your own beer.
So if you just
want
to go to the concert, you're like, okay, yeah. I'm going to the concert. There's beer I can drink.
It's a lot cheaper, like not having that beer.
But if you're a stud, if you're an amazing person, you're like, I'm doing a craft beer festival and a concert all in one goddamn day.
Yeah. So it's basically, if I had to describe it, it's like the Coachella of beer festivals.
Wow.
It was pretty insane. Like Saturday.
Those are some big words right there, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bitch.
No, so Saturday and Sunday, I think each there was about like 70 or so breweries.
Wow.
And a handful of the breweries, like Figueroa Mountain, Mammoth Brewing Company, obviously all the local breweries up there and a few others, they were pouring both Saturday and Sunday, whereas a lot of the breweries were just pouring Saturday or just pouring Sunday. So
okay.
Even though there was like 150 breweries up there, it's not like everyone was pouring all in one day.
So is there a pass that you can just do, like a master pass?
Yeah,
where you're
there,
like, hey,
I'm like
premium,
the
I can Ford, go all
the
time.
Yeah, there was like the premium, like all in, like VIP thing. But I think that one was basically about the price of a Coachella ticket. I think like $300 or something.
Honestly, that didn't really sound like a lot to me.
No, I mean, it's
$300 for all that sounds really good.
I mean, yeah, it's not a bad deal. But I mean, when you compare it to like going to any other beer festival, even when you get VIP, it's usually like, you know, $85.
Well, VIP for the Firestone Invitational, I think, was like $300.
Yeah.
And look, I mean, a lot of that, you know, the base ticket, not the VIP, so you got in an hour later, that was $99. So, I mean, there was a discrepancy there, but mm-hmm. that difference went to a charity.
Right.
Know? But at the same time, people paid for that, and that basically means from noon to 5, you're drinking. Look, and well worth it, but at the same time, you get, for $300 for 2 days, to do two craft beer festival days, at the same time you have all this music. That's a great freaking deal right there.
Yeah. And the Mammoth Bluesapalooza is actually one of the biggest fundraisers for the, I believe it was the CCBA, the California Craft Brewers Association.
Right.
And I think they raised well over like $30,000 or something when you take into account like all the ticket sales and all of that. Because all the breweries pretty much just like donated their beers.
Oh, that's cool.
So
that's very cool.
People buy the tickets and then everyone has just a good time. Friday night though, and Saturday, it was pouring rain. So being in Mammoth, like if you've ever been to Mammoth, like in the rain, it smells amazing. Like the water mixes with like the pine needles, or it's something magical, and it smells delicious. But then
I like getting caught in the rain.
Don't you?
Usually after piña coladas.
And then Sunday was a beautiful sunny day, and overall it was, like I said, the best beer festival I've ever been to. And if you didn't go, you missed out, and you should definitely go next year.
All right, so here's what I am going to say, because this is of interest to, I don't know, anyone who ever gets drunk and does something incredibly stupid. I need to hear a little bit about your bud and the dump bucket. And let's do it in like, if we're running out of time here, so let's do this.
We'll
in
do
like,
it quick, and we won't use real names.
Yeah, no, the names have been changed.
So we'll call him Bud.
Bud.
So Bud comes
Let's call him Buzz.
Bud comes up, and there was a dump bucket that breweries will use to, like, you know, clear their lines or rinse other people's glasses out. And we'll just say Bud came up and was like, hey, like, let me skip your line and drink some beer. And I was like, hey, I got this long line. You can't just cut. And I was like, hey, how about this? So I scoop his, like, as a joke, I scooped up a little of this dump bucket beer, which being in Mammoth, there was a lot of maybe like wood chips and whatnot in there as well.
Well, it's very woodsy out there.
Very woodsy.
And piney, apparently.
Oh, very piney.
Very piney.
So I was like, oh, yeah, just drink this little, you know, it's a sample glass. So it's only like a 5 ounce total glass. And I fill it maybe like a couple ounces, like half full, like 2.5 ounces or so.
But by
like,
filling it, you mean you dipped it.
I just dipped it under there. So I did it to his friend, actually, and he was like, oh, no, man, I'm not going to drink that. That's just no. That's like a nope from me.
Winning.
And he gets this. He gets heated up. He's like, oh, yeah, I want to do this. And so after his buddy told me, like, he didn't want to do it, I just, like, went to just dump it back in the dump bucket. And the glass slipped out of my hand and fell into the dump bucket. And I looked at it. I was like, oh, like, should I just tell him, like, he's not never getting his glass back? And I was like, nah, whatever. So I just reached my hand in there, and it was already
so
bad
forget,
enough.
So for clarification, forget about drinking it.
It
even
was bad
you
enough
reaching
for me to
it.
Reach my hand in it. I was like, no, this is a, yeah, this is also
it just
a no.
It tastes like something that would be a product of the juice.
But yeah, then Bud comes up, and he's like, hey, you know what? He gets all amped up. He's like, I'll drink it. Fill that thing up. And I'm like,
oh,
all
shit.
Right. So I brimmed it. I filled it up straight to the brim, and he takes it, and he has the look of determination in his eyes, and he just down and wound it. It was done.
So immediately after this happening, what was the look on his face?
Did he get dementia and like puke?
You know, I couldn't even pay attention to his face.
Was it instant
because
dementia?
Then the other bud, he was like, hey, actually, let me drink some too. So they both drank some. His friend only drank like a half glass, but then I was like, hey, you guys need to rinse that out. So then I filled him up with some more beer, and then
everything moved on.
Tried to make peace. And then they left, and I
did they realize what had happened? I mean, like truly realize what had happened?
I mean, it's kind of like when anyone gets drunk, that you get so determined to do anything that you can't really refrain, you know? Like you just get that, fired up passion.
I'm just going to say,
disgusting, but.
You don't know, absolutely disgusting. Hold that thought.
Final round.
Never mind that shit.
We got some rounds pretty close to each other, but we got to power through. There are people drinking with us at home. We got to do this.
Yeah.
Get off the stage, you drunk bastard!
This is the kind of buzz that's going to set in after we get done recording.
I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
Yeah, it's going to get out of our hand later. Sorry. So you were saying?
No, he just had that look of determination. I don't think he really realized what had happened until later.
Well, how old is he? I know we had a millennial discussion last week, so
yeah, I guess he would be within the millennial range.
Droopy-eyed, armless children.
Seriously, millennial. What the fuck is millennial?
I know. Yeah, you missed that one, Melman.
Melman.
It was. We had quite the rousing discussion about millennials and how they're ruining craft beer. Would that be a correct statement?
I thought it was about how millennials were making craft beer better. And all those old timer constellations.
Well, no,
are
that,
like
I mean,
buying them all up.
No, but the article was about how millennials were terrible, and we were talking.
Yeah, no, that,
you
that,
know,
yeah, that was.
Yeah, we went down a road. Yeah. He denies being a millennial. Wait, how old are you?
I plead the fifth.
He's a millennial.
Yeah, right.
26.
Right, millennial. Right.
You're a millennial.
Okay. Well, no, and this is important because we need the millennials' viewpoint on stuff. I mean, we need to know how you feel about all this.
A young otter is bound to make new acquaintances.
Sure are. But we need to know, you know, we need an opinion on this kind of thing, you know. So we're going to come to you. You got to accept your millennial status, bro.
All right.
You're better than all the others.
Droopy-eyed, armless
Thank you.
Children.
You're welcome.
So it's just going to have to happen, but... We need. You're kind of our millennial insider. In fact, I think you are now Otter the Millennial Insider.
Like beavers, otters are fond of tools.
So we're going to need you to get right in there. Just get right in there.
Ball deep.
Okie dokie.
All right, everyone. Well, that has been the BoozeCast draft number 2. Anything you've missed on here, anytime you didn't write down any websites that we mentioned, anytime we didn't mention a website, we're going to list it all on the website. Go on there, click on it. In fact, the fact I'm mentioning it, you've probably already seen it because you went there to listen to it in the first place. So check that out, but also check us out online, Facebook, Instagram. Coming up on future BoozeCasts, what's that?
Twitter
at BoozeLeague.
And the Snapchat is coming soon.
Snapchat's coming from Otter. If you want to follow any of us individually, at Wiley Withers. Again, you don't have a Twitter, right?
No, mine's like at. I don't use it often, so don't follow me.
Yeah,
it's going to be very, very, very unentertaining.
Melman, do you have one? Do you have a Twitter?
I have a Twitter. No, I don't use my Twitter. No.
Yeah. So, but you can follow me at Wiley Withers. You can follow at BoozeLeague. You can follow our intern Earl. Go on there and literally follow him and just give him as much shit as you can. You can follow him.
He needs that.
He does, dude.
He's
this guy is at the Earl Abides on Twitter and Instagram. So coming up in the future BoozeCast, we are eventually going to get to a profile of the most interesting man in the world. and talk about the new most interesting man in the world and their differences. We'll check in with Amanda Miller, the Booze League bombshell. We're going to be doing a Girl Stout cookie. Girl Stout.
German.
Stout. Yeah, I know, right? Well, you know, in my country, you know, we pronounce the C and the T in the same way. You guys are real tunts. We'll have a Girl Scout cookie.
You meant to say cunt.
And beer marinade. We're also looking at doing a live recording from the very first live recording for the BoozeCast from a Firestone Tap takeover. And we are doing a Booze Babe here soon. Actually, Steven's doing the Booze Babe, Mr. Otter. But we are going to bring on a Booze Babe here and bring her on. So check us out online. Hook up with us online. Hashtag Booze League. And you know what? Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers. Woo.
Hey, may misfortune follow you the rest of your life and never catch up.
And never catch up.